This is the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, a production of ProWrestling.net. I'm Will, he's Jake. You can follow us on Twitter at It's Will Time and at Barnett Jake. On today's show, a preview of WWE Extreme Rules, plus discussion of New Japan Pro Wrestling's G1 Climax Tournament, WWE not getting an Emmy nomination, and what's making us happy in wrestling this week. So, Jake, I sort of feel like I have to start every show we do now saying we're back since it's been a couple weeks. But with vacation and me traveling for the site last week, that's just the way life is.
Sometimes it conspires against you. I was out of town for a couple weeks and you were out of town. And yeah, so hopefully going forward, it won't be as bumpy, but we'll see what happens.
Hey, if it is, I mean, we've had a good run. It's been what, like 7 years of doing this?
It's been a long time. Yeah.
It's wild. Yeah.
Life gets in the way sometimes.
What's the 7th anniversary gift?
I don't know. I don't. That's a good question.
Yeah. I don't even know when that would be, but
is like, that usually when people like
give
split
up?
Split up. Yeah.
Yeah. Basically. I think we're at the average divorce, timeline now. So Jake, it's been real.
It's been great.
Really nice to hang out with you. I get custody of the wrestling on Mondays and Wednesdays. You can keep Tuesdays.
Fair enough.
So a topic I wanted to bring up before we got into the Extreme Rules preview that is really the meat of this show. Jake, WWE was shut out for an Emmy. And this is remarkable because it's the first year WWE has ever tried to win an Emmy. And I think we all took some pot shots at WWE doing a 4-year consideration event for Emmy voters, but it was a legitimate effort to win or to attempt to win or be nominated for an Emmy award. And what are your thoughts on them kind of not making it?
I guess I kind of thought it was a stretch. You know, they don't produce the type of content that would really inspire the community that votes for the Emmys to nominate someone. Jason and I spoke about this briefly, when we recorded .NET Weekly, and I guess my biggest takeaway was, well, you know, lean hard on your production, and you have great live events, there's categories that they may fit into in that vein where they might score some nominations eventually if they're able to bring something innovative to the table. But when it comes to the content of their shows, it's like I don't really know where they would fit in to most Emmy categories. They just don't have the writing, the acting quality, that kind of thing to sway people. But I see where, what they were doing this year with the mixed match challenge. And I think they Raw was kind of in a category for like a structured reality show and stuff like that. So there are things where I think they're trying to work their way in order to increase the company's visibility in the television industry and get some recognition and credibility. But I just don't think it's been a great couple of years for their television product. And so if that improves, things can change, but I just don't think they're there right now.
Yeah. My take on this is the 4-year all of it was not about this year. I don't think WWE is trying for this year's Emmys as much as to say, we're here, please notice us. Like the 4-year consideration event, I think, was to plant the seeds to say 4 or 5 years from now, after Emmy voters have been to a lot of those and maybe to a WrestleMania, should one end up in Los Angeles, I think it's so people will look at that and say, oh, yeah, we'll award them with an Emmy now. I think they're going multi-year on this. And it sort of reminds me of what they've done with TV rights and what they've done with their own programming lately. And even with, say, the move to PG, when they did that, that was about, the move to PG was ultimately about getting billion-dollar TV contracts. It just took a lot of time. And it took them time to kind of wash the stink of wrestling off, if you will. The advertisers won't spend money, or it's not worth paying attention to-ness of wrestling. And I think they're doing that. And this was another step in doing that. And I look at it and I kind of laugh.
Is it all about advertisers, though? In that case? I think
it's all about cable money, that cable TV rights deal money, because that's where their primary income is now.
Yeah, I mean, they're locked in for 5 years, and I guess continuing to ratchet up the pressure on, you know, networks and content providers by getting Emmys would be, you know, I guess would be another feather in their cap when they go back to renegotiate, you know, whenever that time is in 2020 something. But the if they're able to get Emmy nominations and Emmy wins, I think they become attractive to more, I guess, a broader range of advertisers as well, because I think that's where they've always really struggled. And they have a good set of advertisers now, but they still don't get the major brands advertising on their products. And that may be what they're aiming for.
I think that's what it is. I really do believe that's what WWE wants as far as even reaching out for Emmys goes. And it's a way to say, look, everyone, wrestling isn't the, you know, Vince likes to criticize the smoky arenas, but wrestling isn't the, say, slack-jawed yokel fans who are all bloodthirsty and ridiculous. Wrestling is for classy people now. I think we need to come out with a brand of champagne called Wrestling for Classy People and see if it sells.
Maybe the Bellas can co-brand this. Yeah, they would have better luck than we would, certainly.
I feel like we could work with them on this. This is all a long con to me, Brie Bella.
Can I just be on the phone when you pitch that to them? I don't even want to say it. I just want to hear it.
Would they be awkwardly talking on speakerphone like they have to on a Total Bellas and Total Divas? So John Cena is listening as well, just shaking his head and crying.
Daniel Bryan's. I just want to see his reaction to your pitch on the show. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah, something tells me it wouldn't go well. I think it's interesting that WWE is even trying for like the prestige awards. And you look, they were entering stuff not in, you know, they weren't going for best drama featuring The Undertaker. They were going for best documentary, outstanding reality programs, both structured and unstructured, and outstanding variety special with WrestleMania. And I commend any Emmy voter that watched all 7 hours of WrestleMania, because that's long. They're very much staying in their wheelhouse, and I don't know that there's an unstructured reality TV show on that's better than Total Divas, so I don't blame them for trying.
I wasn't sure where the line is drawn between structured and unstructured.
I think structured means it's a game show type thing, but I don't know, because they entered Mixed Match Challenge and Raw there, and it seems weird to even consider those reality shows, because they are... they're scripted programs
with fictional characters, you know, not playing their actual personas, you know, so that's a weird one. But maybe the line between reality TV and fictional TV is kind of blurred at this point anyway.
Factually correct. Hey, that was almost a funny response to that. All right, Jake, do you want to get into Extreme Rules now? It's the one night a year WWE gets extreme.
Is there, like, there's one Extreme Rules match, right? And it's the women's match, Alexa Bliss and Nia Jax.
Yeah.
I think everything else has sort of avoided the extreme stipulations, except there's a tables match.
There's a cage match, a tables match, a singles match. Wait. Yeah.
Yeah, there's just, I don't know. I think they should just drop Extreme Rules as a pay-per-view name and move on to something else. I don't know what the best choice would be, but it just doesn't seem like there's an appetite for the extreme stuff like there once was. It's kind of something they could retire at this point.
Extreme Rules, theoretically, is the offshoot of the ECW One Night Stand shows. Like, they did One Night Stand in 2005, and people loved it, so they did One Night Stand in 2006 to relaunch ECW. That went well. And then in 2007, they did One Night Stand subtitle Extreme Rules, and they did that for a couple years. And then they just made it Extreme Rules, I think, when they tried to get rid of the sexual innuendo of One Night Stand, because, you know, you can't have kids knowing about the One Night Stands or something.
That would have been a fun meeting to be a part of backstage, just having somebody explain that to Vince. Perfect.
Yeah. It's weird that they're kind of still doing the ECW revival show. And there was a point where it was the show right after WrestleMania, and it was WrestleMania with stipulations. And now it's just a couple stipulations sprinkled about, and one of the random pay-per-views they do. I continue to just look at WWE's pay-per-view naming constructs and go, do you need this? Like, I think the takeovers do well just saying, hey, it's a takeover Brooklyn. It's takeover whatever. And this could be, I guess branding becomes an issue, but WWE Live, where is this? Pittsburgh? Like, you know, it could be something that simple.
Yeah, I it doesn't bother. I mean, they could resurrect any number of names and attach them to these shows, and it wouldn't bother me. I think there was, I can't even recall where I saw it, but there was a rumor that they were going to bring back some of the WCW pay-per-view names, which would be fine by me too. You know, they have a whole library of these things that have been buried over the years that they could resurrect. But your idea is just as good. I mean, they don't necessarily need to, you know, to continue to give these things names that sort of inherit stipulations that most people don't really care about.
So let's start with the one Extreme Rules match on the show. It is Alexa Bliss defending the Raw Women's Championship against Nia Jax. And Ronda Rousey is going to be sitting at ringside, Jake. Shocker. It's going to be crazy. Do you think she'll do the big dramatic, I have a ticket walk from like the late 90s?
Oh, yeah. They should ham it up as much as possible. I mean, they've already basically given away the fact that she's going to get involved in this match and be a part of the finish. So I don't know why they wouldn't, you know, make her as much of a part of this as they can. You know, have her buy a ticket, and, you know, have her make, you know, over-the-top reactions to things on camera. Whatever you got to do just to make it seem like she's a, you know, because she's clearly what they're going for, crowning her a champion at SummerSlam. So make her a part of this as much as they can.
Do you think she'll sit at ringside for the entire show like John Cena did for the first hour and a half of WrestleMania?
I'm all for it. Yeah, just have her out there interacting with people and you know, kind of sheepishly shying away from creepy wrestling fans.
Oh my gosh, that would be like, John Cena's a guy you can do that with and put people around him and he'll be fine. Putting any of the women out there just worries me, given how weird some of the ringside wrestling fans can be.
Yeah,
tell her to avoid the clown.
It's a troubling experience out there. If you're a, especially if you're an attractive woman, I couldn't even imagine.
Yeah, that's exactly why I'm not an attractive woman.
I didn't make that choice either. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Alexa Bliss retains the title somehow here. Ronda gets involved. I kind of wonder if it'll be a no contest and Ronda will murder everyone, or if Ronda gets involved somehow, ends up knocking them both out. Alexa crawls over, gets the pin. That's really the only question, is how Alexa escapes with the title. And do you think it's a triple threat at SummerSlam or a one-on-one match?
I'm going to lean towards triple threat, just because I think they probably, you know, want Nia Jax involved. She's
over.
I mean, she's been somehow pretty solid. I mean, yeah. I don't think they took the right approach with her coming out of WrestleMania. And, you know, they've been doing the flip flopping with her as a character. One month she's a heel, the next month she's back to babyface. But I think there's, you know, an undeniable talent there, and she's got a connection with the crowd. So keeping her involved would not be a bad idea.
Yeah. And I just look at the logic of the SummerSlam match and them wanting it to be as good as it can be. And maybe if Ronda's winning the title, wanting it to go on last. And I think you take a little bit of pressure off of Ronda Rousey, who has performed like really magnificently in the ring thus far. You take some pressure off of Ronda Rousey if you also have Nia Jax in the ring with her. If you give her a little bit of cover to be what she's going to be and let Nia and Alexa both feed her and get her into the right spot. I think that the triple threat's the right way to go there. AJ Styles defends the WWE Championship against Rusev. Is it going to be Rusev Day on Sunday?
No, not. I like Rusev, and I think he's been fantastic, you know, sort of organically getting this whole gimmick over. You know, people love the whole Rusev Day thing, but they're still making the same mistake that they've been making for 10 months, which is that they haven't recognized that people just want to like the guy, and they still, you know, cast him as this arrogant heel character. And I just don't think it's working. There's a juxtaposition between his character and what the crowd wants to do with him. And maybe this title match will, you know, sort of be the pivot point where they start moving him in the right direction. I'm not sure. But I think until that happens, he's probably not going to become WWE champion, certainly. So I think Styles retains here, but I expect it to be a very entertaining match. I think they're both very talented in the ring.
Yeah, I think this could be a really fun match. I'm looking forward to AJ Styles kind of giving Rusev his best match ever. I think that's kind of what AJ goes into the ring to do against opponents who are game. And I believe Rusev will be game, and they'll have a really fun match together that ends with AJ Styles winning. There's no other way to do it. Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt defend the Raw tag titles against the B-Team. And Jake, what am I not getting about the B-Team? I walked away for a month. I came back. The B-Team was popular, and I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of started out as this lovable losers thing, and now they like can't lose. I guess the lovable winners. It feels like too much too soon. Like, you know, the first couple of weeks where they were just like absolutely flabbergasted that they had won a match, and you know, people were happy for them in that regard. Like that was kind of cute and fun. But now they're very quickly getting title matches and moving. Like it just seems like too much too soon. Like they haven't really established any depth or, you know, anything with these characters. Not that WWE does that particularly well anywhere, but it does seem like they've kind of outstripped their tires on this one. They're going way too fast. So I'm assuming that Matt and Bray retain. I guess I just don't know what the future would be with the B team as tag team champions, unless they're just a quick transition to another team that they didn't want to beat Matt and Bray or something along those lines. But I'm assuming Hardy and Wyatt retain and move on from this quickly.
Yeah, I think the same. Carmella and Asuka, James Ellsworth is in a shark cage. Jake, they have to put that title on Asuka now, right? Like there's no way they don't. Like it's time. It's beyond time. I can't watch every woman on SmackDown feud with James Ellsworth again. I can't. Like I'm over it already. I'm kind of having a nervous breakdown because it is so frustrating to watch all of these awesome performers stuck in a feud with James Ellsworth, whose very like gimmick is that he's mediocre. Jake, I'm broken. I can't do this.
Yeah, did they watch him do that silly intergender stuff on the indies and want to bring him back because of that? I guess I'm not really sure what the motivation was. I mean, I don't hate James Ellsworth, but I think
– But he should not be the entire story of your woman's division.
No, he's been used exceptionally poorly. I didn't think Carmella needed the gimmick, you know? Like it was very
no.
It was very strange to see them put them back together. And I guess they wanted to come up with an excuse for why she would beat Asuka in their first match. But it seemed like they went to, you know, they had other options inside the division they could have used for that. So I don't know what the motivation is here. I'm assuming that Carmella is going to retain somehow, some way. Ugh. You know, I just don't think they have the confidence in Asuka right now. I mean, it just doesn't seem like they're motivated to put a championship on her. They really like using her as like this buzzsaw, and you know, who can beat up James Ellsworth, but it doesn't seem like she's being built as the future of the division, unfortunately. And I think a lot of that has to do with their lack of confidence in her English language promos. But you know, I think SummerSlam will be the point where Carmella gets dethroned, and I just don't know if that's going to be Charlotte coming back or if they're actually going to make a move with somebody like Becky Lynch, who they've been portraying pretty strongly on television lately. It's sort of up in the air. I don't know what's going to happen, but I think Carmella retains here.
I'd love for them to take the kind of capital they're investing in Becky Lynch right now and put this title on Asuka, have Asuka win a rematch in the main event of SmackDown sometime in the next couple weeks, and then move to Asuka versus Becky or something. I know, you know, it's easy to pitch, do the good wrestling match, but like really do the good wrestling match.
Do the good wrestling. Like, yeah, I would like to see that as a triple threat, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to see Charlotte and Becky take on Asuka in a triple threat, and then you can have Asuka lose the championship without getting pinned, you know.
Yeah.
And then you have an automatic story there. So it seems like an easy road to take, but for some reason, they always seem to take the very convoluted one.
There's one spot where the convoluted road is really working for me. And it's Kane referencing NSYNC as much as possible. I'm about
that
it.
That was brilliant. wasn't it? It was hilarious. I laughed out loud in my living room. It was great.
Yeah. Like WWE comedy is not always my thing, but I would be fine with Kane quoting NSYNC in every promo he does until the day he retires.
Even if it's forced. I mean, it was pretty forced in that New Day promo, but it still worked for me. It's great.
It was so good. Yeah. NSYNC fan Kane is life. I'm about it. And I'm pretty sure Team Hell No lose this match somehow, right? Oh, and they're fighting the Bludgeon Brothers, in case anyone didn't know that. I got distracted by NSYNC.
I just don't know if this Team Hell No thing can't be long term. I mean, isn't Kane like having an election in a couple of months? Like the most they could stretch this out would be like until the fall, and maybe they'll get a SummerSlam match out of it. But I don't think they're going to be champions unless they are going to quickly put the titles on and then take them off immediately next month or something. Like they just have like a short term arc plan for this. But it just seems like the Bludgeon Brothers have been portrayed so strongly that it would be strange to see them lose clean to a team that's basically two singles wrestlers in short order. But I guess WWE does that from time to time in the tag division, where they kind of shortchange the teams in favor of some temporary star power. So I could see it going either way, but my gut tells me the Bludgeon Brothers win.
Yeah, and I think an easy way to do that here is the Miz gets involved, and that sets up Miz and Bryan. They put them in the same ring on Tuesday, and I think that was a bit of a, all right, everyone, we're getting to it, type of gesture.
Well, I think Miz and Bryan have been working house show matches too.
So yeah,
it's not out of the question that they're going there now.
Yeah, and I think that's going to be super enjoyable. That as the opening match at SummerSlam would be really, really fun.
Yeah, it could be one of those follow that kind of matches where they really tear it down.
Because the Miz has been awesome in the ring lately. Like sorry, I just used this catchphrase unintentionally and I hate myself a little bit. But the Miz has been on like a high level in the ring, and especially a higher level than I think most anyone ever expected him to be at, including when he feuded with Daniel Bryan before. And Bryan is great and is yet to have the really great match since returning. And I think it's a little bit of opportunity. Hard to have a big match with abusive asshat Big Cass. Also hard to have a good match with when you're in kind of that tag division and not fully able to showcase what you can do. So I think that would be a big opportunity. But in order to do that, you got to keep these tag titles off of Bryan and Kane.
Yeah, or at least if they're going to go that route where they get a quick victory, they could turn around and hand the titles back on a SmackDown main event or something to set up that Miz feud if they wanted to go down that road. I just don't know what the long-term plan is. They seem like they can't make up their mind as to whether they want to do Miz and Bryan at SummerSlam or if they want to continue to put it off until WrestleMania or something. And I think Bryan sort of indicated in a recent interview that he has no faith in their ability to tell long-term stories, so maybe he's pushing for a SummerSlam match.
And I just don't think it's logical. Like I'm all for long-term storytelling. I don't think that's the logical story to go long-term with. I think you get to that and you can do it for 3 or 4 months. I don't think anyone's going to complain about a long Daniel Bryan and Miz feud, given the material they have, and that you can basically write go to ring and argue in the script, and those two will make it look excellent. Look at their talking smack work. Like look at the real stuff they were able to do there, and it would be awesome to see them bring that into the ring and recreate that energy and that kind of frenetic what is going on type of feel to it, because it was really great what they did.
So do you think the Miz needs an enforcer if they go down that road?
Like no.
No?
I think he's legit enough. Like I think Miz is plenty legit in the ring. I think he should cheat to win, but I think Miz can carry his own.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just curious what we're expecting. I don't know if they could stretch it out to 3 or 4 months without giving Bryan a win, unless they're going to make, get other people involved somehow. But we'll see what plays out. I'm open-minded on the subject.
They did that big Cass feud for a while without.
Oh
yeah.
Right? Yeah. You're right.
that was plenty bad. Cass didn't have an enforcer.
No, no, he did not.
The match I'm most excited about this show is Seth Rollins and Dolph Ziggler in the Iron Man match. I just think it's going to be really, really fun. Seth Rollins has been delightful lately, a really great professional wrestler on basically every level. Dean Ambrose is not around. I don't know why I said his name. Dolph Ziggler. There it is.
You may see Dean Ambrose in this match.
You think?
I think it's possible.
A little return to run off Drew McIntyre.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't know if it'll be, if it'll lead to Seth actually getting the win here, but I think it could. You know, if Drew gets involved in a couple of falls and Seth goes down in a hole or something for where you can't recover the match, you may see Dino get involved. I think he's going to be around for SummerSlam, so I wouldn't be shocked to see him come back to TV this week.
Yeah, that'd be really fun. I think Dolph Ziggler wins this match. He's been reinvigorated by this feud. I think the pairing with McIntyre, as weird as it is, and it feels a little bit like, really, you got Drew McIntyre over there, and he's great, you guys. Like, don't you want him? It feels like this is reinvigorating both of them in a way and helping McIntyre to ease his way back onto the main roster and not become a 3MB member. I mean, there's electricity when McIntyre and Roman Reigns have stare downs at this point, and I think that's really fun.
Yeah, he's got, you know, major star written all over him. I mean, it's crazy. Like, I think WWE.com posted a video where, like, the former 3MB members got together with Hornswoggle and they watched the WLC match. And, like, McIntyre looks like an entirely different person. Like, he's so much bigger than he was then. It's crazy. Like, he's just a beast. And so I guess I'm looking forward to the point where he breaks free from Ziggler. And I was surprised to see them put together at first, but I think it's working, and I think they're slowly making their way to the point where, you know, McIntyre is going to tire of him, and eventually they'll have a feud. But I do think, you know, Ziggler has been a great bridge for him from NXT to the main roster. And this match, I mean, it's got Show Stealer written all over it. So I think Ziggler.
In fact,
retains.
That's written on Dolph Ziggler's tights. I'm guessing. I'm calling my shot.
It will be, but this one will, you know, is the one everyone's looking forward to. And Seth Rollins has not had a disappointing match in a long time, so I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens here.
Roman Reigns versus Bob Lashley. How great! I can criticize Roman Reigns for a lot of things, but every time he says Bob Lashley, I go, Roman Reigns is a great professional wrestler, and I love him.
Yeah, I really like when Roman kind of shows off the fact that there's this other character they could be portraying him as, but they just don't let him. And it's just really frustrating. Like, he could be this really arrogant swagger guy, and he's just
calling people Bob.
Calling them names they don't want to be called. But yeah, it's perfect. I don't know. This feud did not excite me particularly. I think, you know, Lashley has been like a mannequin since he got back. Just like, you know, very, he has no facial expressions. He has a very monotone delivery of everything. It seems like he's regressed a good deal, because I think he was doing better microphone and character work in Impact before he left there. So it's been a bit unfortunate to watch the way he's been portrayed on WWE TV. But I do think this match will be fun, and it's like one of those Hoss matches, you know, where it's just you don't know what's going to happen, but it's going to be a crazy fight, and that's a good thing. You know, it's got that going for it. But I think Reigns probably picks up a win here. I just don't know where Lashley goes from here.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. And that I could see maybe a Lashley heel turn at some point. I think pairing Lashley with Ziggler and McIntyre could be really fun if Dean Ambrose is coming back, because I'd put the Shield on. I'd put a Shield reunion on SummerSlam. Like, yeah, sure, let's do it. Get the fists in and everything.
I think Lesnar's probably going to be back for SummerSlam, and they'll have Roman doing that. But I would definitely consider.
No one should face Brock Lesnar. Roman doesn't deserve that again.
Or you could put him. You know, you could put Brock against Braun. I guess it depends on the direction they're going.
Yeah.
I really don't know, but I would definitely think a Shield reunion could be on the table for the fall, because it seems like, you know, McIntyre, Ziggler, and Lashley would be a great counter to that, especially if they get Lashley going as a heel and he actually develops a personality.
And there's something to be said for the WWE system sapping the confidence from people. One of the interesting things, what's-his-face, Juice Robinson said this past weekend at the at the New Japan like press interview session, he was talking about how in NXT or in WWE, he felt like he had to walk on eggshells all the time and no one was telling him to, but it seemed like everyone was just a second away from getting in trouble or getting fired, or everything was just kind of, you know, bad. Like, it was hard to get on a roll and get confident because there was always something there to steal your confidence. And that's just not the environment that some guys thrive in. And I think Lashley may be one of those guys that he gets there and it's a lot bigger and it's a little much. And he doesn't have the supporters who are going, hey, man, you got this. You're going to be fine. Here's how you do, you know, here's how you display this character. Here's how you show this. He doesn't have the collaborators, it seems like, that he needs to be fully confident. And it's a bummer because Lashley can be very good in that collaborative process, but doesn't seem to be shining in the WWE process thus far. And maybe making him a heel. I mean, there are so many wrestlers that you say, oh yeah, they found their confidence as a heel because they didn't have to be confident and likable. They could finally just be confident. And it turns out eventually they became confident and likable in that process. And maybe Lashley is one of those guys, and it's going to take that time. And I think even a pair with Ziggler and McIntyre, both of whom have really strong characters, a team with them would actually set Lashley up to not have to carry the burden all on his very large shoulders.
I mean, they should be willing to try, you know, whatever. Clearly what they're doing isn't working. So let's move on to something else. I mean,
has he tried a different color headband? Just maybe like a green?
They did have to have him quickly reverse his headband because he left the Nike logo facing outward one episode of Raw.
My goodness.
Some panicked referee ran over and like, turn your headband around. It was a nice moment of embarrassment for Bobby.
Excuse me, his name is Bob. Yeah. Just like Bob Roode. I'd like to think Robert. Roman Reigns walks through the locker room just like, Bob Roode! Lashley! Calling everyone by the wrong name.
Could they just be a tag team called the Bobs? That would just be fantastic. Let's just do that.
He keeps calling Finn Balor Fergal and then winking at him like, yeah, I know. Sup, Ferg?
Oh, man. I don't think Finn Balor would be the least bit troubled by that. He probably would dig that Fergal reference backstage. And do you think I guess I don't know what people call each other backstage, but Fergal is kind of an interesting name, so I would be proud of that one.
Calls Braun Brawny. Just always thinks he's a paper towel man.
Oh, God. Paper towel man. Wow.
Jeff Hardy defends the U.S. title against Shinsuke Nakamura. This seems like a chance to get Shinsuke going. I think that's what it is. Jeff has looked fine in the ring, but also like he's hurting. There have been reports, Jason had it out there, that Jeff has been dealing with some nerve issues and injuries. And I think this may be time to get the title off of Jeff Hardy and give Shinsuke something to get to dig into as a heel.
Yeah, definitely. I would predict a title change here. I mean, I think we'll probably end up getting a rematch out of it at some point, maybe if it's on television or on the next pay-per-view. I'm not quite sure, but I think they do need to do a little bit of rehabilitation with Shinsuke. They never really allowed him to get any breathing room in the feud with Styles. He just continually lost the entire thing.
That turtleneck is constricting, man.
It is. And so he'll need to get a little bit of rehabilitation going on television, and being a strong U.S. champion can do that. And it's similar to what they did for AJ Styles after they sort of moved on from him as WWE champion a couple of years ago. So it's a predictable path they typically take. So we'll see what happens. I'm curious as to whether or not this heel Shinsuke character will succeed, but I think they've been giving it a good effort thus far, and he's improved on the microphone as well.
Have we talked about how cool that turtleneck is? Because heel Shinsuke's turtleneck is pretty amazing.
It is pretty good, yeah. It's a very heel outfit to wear.
Yeah, I kind of want one of my own, but I feel like I won't look as good in it. Fergal H. Finnegan Balor IV against Constable Baron Corbin. This is basically just Big Cass and Daniel Bryan, right?
Yeah, I think they have a little bit more confidence in Corbin than they do and they did in Big Cass. So I think we see Corbin get a win here. It just seems like the first match in a feud where the heel gets a win and eventually Balor will give him some comeuppance. But I think they like this Constable Corbin character and they like the direction that Corbin is taking on television. And this is just one of those matches where we see the heel get a surprise win and then Balor has to come back and even the score.
Yeah, I think this is all Finnegan's match to win. Dare I say it's his rainbow. Finn, I have Finn winning this. Braun Strowman versus Kevin Owens in a steel cage match. Why was there a porta potty involved in this at all, Jake? What did I do to deserve this?
I don't know. They've really made Kevin Owens out to be a sympathetic heel, and I don't know exactly if they're planning on turning him babyface at some point, which I think he would succeed at, mind you. But it just doesn't seem like Braun has been typical babyface, you know, in terms of the way he's acted on TV. But the porta potty was a bad stunt, and I don't think it was as well received as they thought it was going to be. And I guess we'll have to see if this continues past this match. But I almost see Kevin Owens getting a win here by having Braun throw him out of the cage by, you know, just throwing him through the side of it and having him land on the floor or something.
I have Braun winning because Braun, and I think maybe, just maybe at SummerSlam, the holding pattern Braun Strowman has been in for over a year can come to an end. I want Braun to do well. I really enjoy Braun Strowman, his work, his character, all of it works really well for me. And I now am just like, okay, can we get the world title on him? Like, can we get that belt off of Brock and onto Braun? Because that feels like where we need to go at this point.
I can't argue with you. I mean, I do want to see Braun cash in that briefcase and get his title. But I'll have to see if it's, you know, if they want him to be more patient than we want him to be or not. I'm hoping that they aren't going to be moving on to Roman, or maybe they will move on to Roman and Lesnar at SummerSlam again. But I'd like to see the cash in take place then.
They've never moved on past Roman and Lesnar. It's been
moving back. Years. Sorry.
It's been 3.5 years.
It's been
years.
Too long.
Help
yeah,
me.
Yeah, too long.
Save me from this never-ending Superman punch German suplex nightmare I exist in.
No kidding.
Yeah. The New Day against Sanity in a tables match on the pre-show. And Jake, this I think could be the second best match of the night because the New Day take their pre-show matches very seriously. Sanity is going to be looking to impress. And I, you know, Killian Dane, Alexander Wolfe, those guys do really great work anyway. So I think we're going to see a really, really fun match on the pre-show.
Yeah, this will be the first pre-show match I go out of my way to watch in quite some time. I have Sanity getting the win here just because New Day got their win on television this past week. But I think this will continue for quite some time. They're definitely going to be amping up this feud. It'll probably be something that ends up, you know, pushing towards the SmackDown tag title picture eventually.
Yeah, and they could do something really fun and electric at SummerSlam, like a tornado tag or, you know, something else that keeps kind of the crazy of this. And I think it's a chance for the New Day to kind of make Sanity as a group. My only hope for this is that eventually I want to see Big E versus AJ Styles as a pay-per-view match. Like, I want that in my world title mix, and I think Big E would perform well. The other guys in the New Day, Kofi and Xavier, would perform well, and AJ and Big E would just be a fun matchup. And that's kind of my wish, is that we get Big E in the Rusev slot as a one-month challenger at some point in the next, like, 6 months.
Yeah, I think Samoa Joe may be that guy for SummerSlam, potentially, but we'll have to see what direction they go in for, you know, with Big E. I think he may end up being like a U.S. championship challenger before he goes all the way up to the big world title, but we'll see.
Could be fun. I'd be fine with that as well. Jake, how excited are you for this show? Are you just like chomping at the bit, excited? It's gonna get extreme. You're gonna hang up your Extreme Rules posters, wear your Extreme Rules t-shirt.
I don't have any of those things, but I'm actually
they are in the mail.
I'm actually interested in the matches in this show. I haven't been particularly inspired by the stories. So if you had to put me on like a 1 to 10 scale, I'd probably be at like a 5 or a 6, just because I do think it'll be entertaining in the ring. But creatively, it's been a rather unfulfilling couple of months on WWE TV.
Yeah, I actually averaged out my excitement level, because I'm a weirdo like that, for each match. I did this for the Extreme Rules video preview that I made yesterday that is on my YouTube channel, if anyone wants to check that out. It's probably real awkward, because it's me on video, but what you gonna do? I'm at like a 6.5-ish, like a kind of a D show. I'm not super excited about it. It's wrestling and it's going to be fun, but yeah. I do want to say though, WWE pay-per-views are long, right? But are they longer than New Japan shows? I wonder about that criticism that gets levied at WWE so often, but not at New Japan. And I think where it's valid is like Raw is too long, the TV shows are too long. But man, the pay-per-views, I'll give them a little bit of a, like, hey, this is allowed to be long feeling.
Ring of Honor's long too. I mean, they have four and a half hour shows. I think the reason that it gets overwhelmingly levied at WWE instead of the others is that we get so much other WWE content on a weekly basis. Like, it just feels like content you're just drowning in it at times. And so I understand why people are like, okay, this is just too long of a time commitment, but it is a little bit unfair when you consider how long, you know, other pay-per-views are going without seemingly getting that same level of criticism. But I'm in the same boat when it comes to New Japan shows. Like, midway through the third hour, I'm like, okay, this is reaching the point where I'm getting impatient with it. And thankfully, most of those shows end up, you know, having their strongest content, you know, that towards the tail end. Otherwise, it would be terrible.
They got to pull you through it, you know. Jake, what's making you happy in wrestling this week?
You know, honestly, I've really been happy to watch the Team Hell No reunion. It's just been a couple of weeks of very fun television. That's been, you know, I tend to like lighter hearted stuff on wrestling shows, especially when the characters involved have a lot of chemistry. And I guess that's making me happy, as well as, you know, we're starting up the G1 tournament. Every time this year, I'm hyped up for that. So there's quite a bit in wrestling right now that I'm pretty pleased with.
Yeah, I am going to say, being in the arena in Cow Palace on a Saturday when Juice Robinson, or Sunday. No, it was Saturday. I have trouble keeping the days of the week straight. But watching Juice Robinson win the New Japan Pro Wrestling U.S. Championship live, it was a really fun moment. The crowd was basically begging for it. Everyone was just so into that moment. And everyone believed in, you know, everyone hated Switchblade as a heel. Everyone believed in Juice Robinson as a babyface. And it was one of those moments where people really just dove headfirst into the story of pro wrestling, and it worked exceptionally well. And it's hard not to be happy for a guy like Juice, who has really grown and advanced so much. And seeing that kind of crowning achievement live was it's a top 10 moment as a wrestling fan for me at this point. The pop he got, all of the excitement, I'm just like, wow, that was cool. That's what this is about.
Yeah, it was great to watch on television. I can only imagine, you know, how much better it would have been in the building. But certainly, you know, you got to feel for Juice, a guy who, you know, bet on himself, leaving WWE, has improved massively.
And left to be a trainee in New Japan. It's not like, you know, because Cody left and went into New Japan as a star. Juice went into New Japan as a young lion. Like, I find that just remarkable that he went from being on NXT TV at a time when NXT was rapidly growing and expanding to being a young lion in New Japan, and was built up through that system and turned into a real star now, like a real homegrown star in New Japan.
Yeah, he'll be part of their you know, push into global expansion. Certainly, you know, he's a charismatic guy. He's great in the ring. You know, he's got a character that people enjoy. His promos are a lot of fun. You know, there's just a lot to like about Juice Robinson right now. I hope he does well, you know, in the G1 as well, because he can easily be one of those guys that ends up pushing his way into the main event in New Japan eventually as well.
Yeah, I think he could definitely. I don't see him being one of their top four guys unless there's another massive exodus, which is always possible. But I see Juice being in that just out of the top four role, somewhere similar on the card to where like Minoru Suzuki is, where you can rotate him pretty much anywhere on the card and he works. Or you get kind of where they have put Zack Sabre Jr. recently too, like up and down and everywhere else. What are you looking forward to most in the G1?
Well, I think the two stories that jump out, and I think everybody's probably talking about them, is the Golden Lovers being in the same block with each other.
My God.
And eventually, you know, what may happen if Naito can get his redemption on Okada for Wrestle Kingdom. And I think those are the two big stories that I'm looking to see play out. And, you know, I've seen some of the press conference promos for the G1, and it seems like, you know, everybody is at the top of their game, at least in terms of being willing to put out the effort to make this a success. So I'm hoping that there are some, you know, upsets and surprise stories and stuff that I'm not anticipating. It's just kind of fun to watch, because I think the biggest draw for me, you know, for the G1 is, of course, you know, there's always the major main event talents that get to rotate through matches that they don't ordinarily find themselves in. But also, you know, there's the upsets and the surprise stories that end up, you know, being sort of a delight that you're not expecting. So there's just a lot to look forward to here.
Yeah, like last year, the breakouts of Evil and Juice Robinson were really apparent in the G1, and it would be great to see more things like that happen. And I hope everyone is safe. I'm a little knowing Ibushi is going into the G1 just after what happened with Hiromu Takahashi last week, breaking his neck, taking a bump on it in the ring. I hope Ibushi is like, hey, I'm gonna be safe this year. But Kota Ibushi is going to Kota Ibushi pretty much no matter what he does.
Yeah, just don't take any unnecessary risks. If like, yeah. I don't know. There's too many neck bumps in New Japan. Please.
Yeah.
Please stop that. Please.
So sorry, I'm keeping you so long right now. I will make this point, then we'll be done. I hope in New Japan, someone goes, hey, if we're going to make this global expansion and kind of increase the amount of wrestling everyone's doing, we're also going to ask, we're going to make it an edict that y'all wrestle safer, that things get tightened up a little bit, and we are going to help you convert your style into something that works safely, because doing all of the international touring they're doing and all the matches, even though Okada and Naito can go out there and have a really light night like they did on Saturday, it's still real easy to take one bad bump and you're out for over a year, and that's really going to get in the way of New Japan's plans.
Well, I mean, and even with people that you are confident with and comfortable with, like Dragon Lee and Hiromu on Saturday night, you know, they had
no
had
one's
that match.
More comfortable with each other than them. Like they are.
They had had that match. They had done that, you know, that Dragon Driver. They had done that spot before in Mexico City multiple times. And, you know, it just takes one lapse in judgment or fatigue or whatever the case is to turn one spot into a nightmare. And if you can eliminate the ones that have the slimmest margin for error, then I think that's a laudable goal.
Yeah, I know people are critical of WWE's style and kind of the spots that they've eliminated, like not doing pile drivers for the most part and not doing certain moves, but there is a reason there are certain moves that WWE does not do, and they're trying to mitigate risk and trying to make sure that guys can keep wrestling. And I don't think New Japan needs to go that far, but I do hope that there is some serious discussion of reining some talent in and safety, because between that happening and then the next match, guardrails not being fastened together and it injuring a commentator on the show, I really think that safety needs to become more of a concern in that promotion, because That could have easily been fans that were hurt. That could have, you know, there are a lot of people that could have been hurt there. And it's terrible that it was Jim Ross. But there, I mean, if that's a fan, that's a real liability issue. And they may have bigger problems than if it's Jim Ross.
Well, I'm trying to remember which match it was in. I think it may have been Cody Kenny's match, but the timekeeper like got blasted in the knee by the guardrail too. Like, I mean, there was plenty of potentially dangerous spots happening on the outside because those guardrails weren't secured. So, I mean, I know when they're in Japan, they typically have young lions at ringside that tend to keep those things in place, but they just didn't have that in the U.S. and that's going to be a continual problem.
Which is interesting. They had essentially the Long Beach Young Lions for the Long Beach show. They had the guys that are training at the L.A. dojo doing that for the Los Angeles show, or for the Long Beach show they did in a couple months ago. So I kind of wonder if they'll just make sure they are at every show now since this not so great thing happened. But Jake, I've kept you for too long. Thank you for hanging out. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Have a delightful week, world.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast. For more, please subscribe to this podcast in Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review, show us that you appreciate us, and if you want even more content, check out ProWrestling.net's membership option.